This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, December 11th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, Amy Guida has this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News and a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana. But first, today's news. A test involving Illinois lawmakers illustrates how much mercury has entered the bodies of state residents. AM 580's Tom Rogers reports on an experiment conducted by proponents of tougher power plant emissions.
The group Mercury Free Illinois took hair samples from 28 lawmakers who volunteered last spring. They found that samples from 9 of those legislators contained more than the federally recognized safe level of mercury. Jean Flemma is with the Urbana-based Prairie Rivers Network. She hopes it encourages a state committee this week to approve tougher limits on mercury emissions from coal-burning power plants. Flemma says those plants have already released tons of the toxic element over time, which has found its way into fish. But she says the new limits could reduce even the existing pollution.
There have been a lot of studies that have shown that local reductions in mercury emissions can, within a few years, lead to significant reductions in that mercury accumulation in the environment. So, yes, of course, it'll take time, but there are some impacts that can be seen fairly quickly.
Two Illinois utilities, Ameren and Dynegy, have voluntarily pledged to put mercury pollution controls into place in advance of the potential state restrictions. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
Jurors in the murder trial of a woman charged with the 2003 drowning deaths of her three young children are scheduled to resume their deliberations today in Decatur. The Macon County jury has so far deliberated about 17 hours in Amanda Hamm's case after hearing 17 days of testimony by 75 witnesses. The 30-year-old Hamm is charged with 9 counts of first-degree murder in her children's death and faces up to life in prison if convicted. Instead of murder, jurors could also convict Hamm of child endangerment, a lesser charge with a sentence ranging from probation up to 20 years in prison. Prosecutors allege Hamm and her then-boyfriend, Maurice Legrone Jr., sank a car in Clinton Lake, killing the children. Legrone was convicted of murder in April and is serving life in prison. The Chicago Law Office, where a gunman fatally shot 3 people, will remain closed today as employees remember their colleagues and meet with grief counselors. In a statement over the weekend, the Wood Phillips law firm didn't say where its employees would gather. It did say the office would reopen tomorrow. Meanwhile, family and friends of the gunman say they knew him as a quiet churchgoer and can't reconcile that with a man who shot 3 men in the Friday evening incident. The gunman, 59-year-old Joe Jackson, also died in the attack that lasted 45 minutes. Jackson's 39-year-old son Darren says his father was frustrated and just snapped. Another woman was wounded in the shooting. Southern Illinois University has formed a 16-member committee to search nationwide for a new chancellor for its Carbondale campus. Walter Wendler was ousted as chancellor of the school last month when university president Glenn Pichard said Wendler's contract wouldn't be renewed. He was replaced on an interim basis by Provost John Dunn. Pichard has made Wendler a tenured architecture professor at SIUC. The search panel is headed by Professor Susan Ford of the Anthropology Department. The committee includes students, professors, staff, and community members. It plans to begin reviewing applications in February, interviewing semi-finalists behind closed doors in March, and select a short list of finalists to visit the campus in April. New Hampshire Governor John Lynch joked yesterday that the Rolling Stones were originally the headliners at a party fundraiser in that state, but he says organizers canceled the band when they realized Barack Obama would sell more tickets to the event. The U.S. senator from Illinois drew 1,500 Democrats to the fundraiser and several hundred more at a book signing in New Hampshire. Obama says he still hasn't decided whether to run for president, even though he made his initial visit to the nation's first presidential primary state. Obama told reporters between events that the presidency isn't an office you can't run for just on the basis of ambition. He says you have to feel in your gut that you have a vision for the country. While welcoming the minimum wage increase passed by the Illinois General Assembly, many supporters say it's not enough. They say it leaves working families' financial security subject to politics. Amanda Vinicky has more.
When Governor Rod Blagojevich first proposed a minimum wage increase, he wanted it linked to inflation. Every year, the wage would go up under a cost of living adjustment, or COLA. The idea was strongly backed by labor unions and other advocates. They came to the Capitol and passed out soft drink cans with paper labels that read, Fair COLA. But the measure awaiting the governor's signature doesn't have a COLA included. Ted Smucklers with the group Interfaith Worker Justice. He says it unfairly means that workers have to depend on politics to determine if they'll get a raise.
We don't think that their wage should remain dependent on the makeup of the legislature, you know, and the political whims of the times.
Smuckler says it's positive, at least, that after next year's dollar an hour increase, minimum wage workers will get a quarter more an hour annually until 2010. Increasing the minimum wage may then again become a debate. That's not lost on Republicans. That's the same year the next gubernatorial race occurs. And in the past, Democrats have used the issue as a rallying cry for votes. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
The search for a way to pay for a new full-day kindergarten in Indiana could renew an ongoing dispute between Republicans and Democrats on how the state should pass out money to school districts. Democrats support minimum guarantees that ensure no district receives less than it did the previous year, while Republicans say districts should be paid on a per-child basis. Democratic House Speaker Pat Bowers says the latest state budget already forced some school districts to cut programs and lay off teachers. Republican Governor Mitch Daniels says he intends to look for more money for schools, but he's waiting on a state revenue forecast this week before saying how much money there might be. Dennis Costarison, executive director of the Association of School Business Officials, says schools have had four very lean years, and officials need to make sure the funding formula meets all schools' needs. For the latest newscast online, go to wiol.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bossert. When does a holiday celebration become overtly religious? It's a question that has constitutional implications, and it's been vexing courts for over 100 years. Here's commentator Amy Guida with this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
Drive through a downtown these days, and you'll likely see holiday decorations placed on city streets by city employees. The city chooses the precise decorations based on the Constitution. The decorations can't be too religious or focus on one particular religion, or they'd violate the mandate against the establishment of religion. But it's tough sometimes to decide exactly where religion ends and secularization begins, especially at this time of year. And the grappling, both in an intellectual and a physical sense, began more than 100 years ago. Back then, Christmas balls sometimes became Christmas brawls, and courts had to decide whether the underlying gathering was a religious one or not. I'll set the scene for you, courtesy of judicial opinions of the day. Imagine, if you will, a Christmas tree entertainment at a certain schoolhouse set aside for such entertainment. Plays, songs, and speeches by the little folks. On a Christmas tree were hung presents, and singing and music upon violins were the entertainments of the occasion. Time for song, prayer, and talk, Mr. and Mrs. Santa Claus taking up said time in distributing presents. Enter Trouble. Trouble in the name of Eugene Stafford of Missouri and Wyatt Lane of Tennessee. Note to listeners, any similarity to persons living today is purely coincidental, as the last of the two cases was decided 100 years ago. Now to the crimes. Mr. Stafford, he struck a fellow reveler with a shovel used about the fire. Mr. Lane, he, under the influence of liquor, kicked the Christmas tree and cursed in a loud voice. Back then, legislatures had taken action to try to stop the likes of Stafford and Lane. The laws were clear that it was a crime to disturb an assembly of people united for divine or religious worship. So when someone dared to shovel or curse at another, the clauses took up said time in distributing handcuffs. But while we're on the clauses, consider the whole entertainments question. Sure, Mr. Lane kicked the Christmas tree to the great annoyance and disgust of the decent people present and disturbed a gathering, but the court overturned his conviction based on the precise language of the statute, specifically the divine worship part. In a decision that would predict hotly debated constitutional arguments to come, the court decided that the gathering wasn't for religious worship at all, but merely a Christmas festival. The court gave Lane a reprimand for swearing in front of women and children, to be sure, but sent him on his way. Stafford wasn't so lucky. The judges found a Christmas celebration, tree, little folks and all, sufficiently religious. Today we fight not so much at Christmas celebrations, save for 5 a.m. cattle call on Black Friday. But courts faced with Establishment Clause arguments still have to decide when government Christmas celebrations or decorations cross the line from routine into religion. And to think it all started with an inexplicable kick to a Christmas tree. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. In the forecast for East Central Illinois, cloudy, a 50% chance of showers today, but a high around 48 degrees. Showers likely tonight with a low in the lower 40s. South winds up to 15 miles per hour, the chance of rain 70%. Showers likely on Tuesday as well with a high around 50 and a 60% chance of rain. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, December 11th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wiol.uiuc.edu. I'm Jeff Bonsert, AM 580 News.